Check this out. I only have 5 spots left already for Elevate 2026 at the time I'm recording this. I only invite 10 men each year to go with me on this epic year-long coaching adventure of brotherhood and deep transformation, and this is my 6th year. If you've heard of Elevate before, or maybe this is the first time, but you're wondering whether this might be for you, know this. The men who do Elevate have typically achieved some level of success in their lives, yet still feel unfulfilled. They're men committed to rising above the distractions and compulsions, sabotaging them from living their fullness as men. And they're eager to be better husbands, better fathers, friends, bosses, just better men in truly meaningful ways. Elevate 2026 includes personal coaching with me for the entire year alongside a select group of men going through this experience with you. We also meet in person for an epic 5-day retreat in the North Carolina mountains about halfway through the year. You will be challenged to go beyond your comfort zone, but that's where the magic happens, where real change happens. And you'll be stepping into an inspired brotherhood with men who have your back and who will become your brothers for life. This journey helps you connect to and more fully live your deepest life purpose, more fully offer your authentic self, your unique gifts to your loved ones, to your community, to the world. Intrigued? Learn more. And if you dare, apply now at brianreeves.com/elevate. Now, this isn't for everyone, but if you think it might be for you, apply now. Just take the next step. This could be one of the greatest gifts you ever give yourself. 1 year. Real brotherhood, radical growth. Go to brianreeves.com/elevate. That's Brian with a Y, reeves.com/elevate for details and to apply. Remember, I've only got 5 spots left, so do not delay. All right, let's dive into today's episode. Welcome to Bridging Connections, formerly known as Men This Way. I'm your host, Brian with a Y, Reeves, former U.S. Air Force captain turned author and professional coach to men, women, and couples. Alongside me as co-host, my lifelong friend of over 40 years, Tate Arendt. Here we have the raw, real conversations we need to be having about the topics that matter most: relationships, purpose, health, spirituality, and more. Please subscribe to stay connected. All right, let's dive. Welcome to the show. I'm on summer break at the moment. My wife and I headed to Scotland on a long overdue vacation. So I'm reaching back into the archives, back to when the show was actually called Men This Way, when I invited on my dear brother, the actor and activist Adrien Grenier. You may know Adrien from the hit HBO series Entourage, or movies like The Devil Wears Prada with Meryl Streep and Anne Hathaway, and other things as well. Adrien's been around on the acting scene for a while, and Adrien and I have been in an intimate men's group together for the last 5 years. So I had the privilege of watching Adrien undergo a massive transformation from hedonistic Hollywood actor and world-famous celebrity to grounded family man, devoted husband, father, and humble steward of 46 acres of deep central Texas land. In this episode, Adrien brings us into the forces that compelled him along that transformational journey, what needed to change for him and why. I think every man who has any kind of ambition, he needs to hear the stories of men who've succeeded in big ways, only to discover the mountain summit ain't all it's cracked up to be, and that it sure ain't worth selling your heart and soul for. We talk about our adventures in brotherhood together, some of the obstacles we've faced along the way, even with each other, and share a few tender moments too. It's a moving conversation between brothers who sometimes struggle to see eye to eye on big issues and yet remain committed to staying partnered, loving, and respectful with each other. One last thing. If you're a man and this episode stirs something in you and you find yourself wondering how a deep brotherhood with inspired men might serve you in profound ways, you should know I'm opening up applications for Elevate 2026, my year-long coaching adventure for men committed to elevating their lives and relationships in 2026. Only 10 men are invited each year on this adventure with me. You could be one of those men. Learn more at brianreeves.com/elevate. It's Brian with a Y, reeves.com/elevate. All right, please enjoy this intimate conversation with Adrien Grenier. My brother, Adrien. Welcome to Men This Way.
Brian with a Y. What's up?
Yeah, man. Here we are. We're doing it. I'm excited, man. Truly, I'm really glad to have you on Men This Way. This is a long time in coming, man. Yeah.
Indeed.
I remember, what was it? What's it been now? Was it 3 years ago? 4 years ago? What? 2 years? I care. At least three.
How many lifetimes is the question, brother? Come on.
Okay. Pardon. I forgot which layer are we talking about here? Lifetimes. Yeah. Who knows? But I remember, Adrian, my first real personal introduction to you came when you were, at least in my view, you were in the midst of a profound life transformation, like a butterfly, a caterpillar in a cocoon moment.
Yes. Right? It's true.
I remember even, we in our men's group, we keep in touch almost daily through a video chat app, right? It's pretty unheard of. Men talking every day to each other, damn near. It's weird.
Yeah. I question the sanity of it all the time.
But I remember, man, your first videos were like, it was like, you were like a hostage. You were like, and then I don't know where you were. Were you in your trailer, your camper at the time?
Yeah. Oh man, I look back at some of those pictures and the videos, and I was so sober. Everything, I was taking things very seriously, including my beard, which was long and robust.
Yeah.
And my hair, hadn't shaved anything. I was in, deep retreat meditation, self-actualization, exploration. And so what I had done was I had rejected all of the material things that I had accumulated. I lived in New York and LA and around the world. I was traveling a lot, and I had a lot of stuff. I had a lot of things and houses and stuff and just material escapes and distractions, shiny objects. Mm. And I knew that I needed to really get low to the ground and just not allow those things to get in the way of my growth journey. So I ended up moving into a camper that didn't have a bathroom. It was tiny camper, maybe 50 square feet. And then there was a garage that did have a bathroom. So I think when we would talk and there would be that brick wall, that was the inside of the garage and where the bathroom was. And I had a little hot plate in there.
Yeah.
So I had a tiny little refrigerator, one of those little, basically beverage refrigerators, and a hot plate, and maybe a plate, a bowl, a spoon, a knife, and a toilet.
Well, I'll tell you, man, it remains a precious memory for me, seeing you really come in with such the way that you occurred for me was just like such humility, such, yes, seriousness, sure, but sort of like a, I know I need to be here, but I don't really know what the fuck I'm doing here. I don't know what this is, but I need this. Again, this was the way it all occurred for me. And it was very precious for me, man, the way that you joined our little crew.
Well, in retrospect, it was precious for me, although I do admit it was very challenging and uncomfortable. So yeah. I really did. And you came into my life at a very important time where I knew that I could not do this journey alone, that I tried to be, ruggedly individual for way too long. And I needed not just any support. I needed masculine support. I needed other men to be a stand for what I wanted, hold me accountable, to comfort me and nourish me in ways that I need, like open heart-centered men who could actually see me for what I was trying to do and not try and hold me back or keep me playing small. Mm-hmm. And I was so blessed to have been invited into the group that you were in with, that Preston invited me into, and that you, I guess, had to give a yes vote for as well.
Yeah, that's right.
So thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
And man, what I feel so, I mean, I can't believe that I got so lucky this group is so special. So it's just and I'm sure like other men's groups are also amazing in their own ways, but like, man, it just came at the right moment where I lapped it up. I sopped it up and learned so much. And you guys were there during, I think, maybe the lowest of the low, darkest of the dark, rock bottom of my journey, where I really needed that light at the end of the tunnel, like that North Star. And as much as I kept at times losing track and thinking I was utterly lost and then didn't know which way was up, you as a group would remind me of my direction. And encourage me and reassure me that I was on the right path and not to stray and not to give up.
Yeah. Wow, man. You're answering a few of my questions ahead of time here, but because I really want to dive into this question, this inquiry of brotherhood with you. I mean, you and I have been amongst this group of, I think, we're 13 men for
12.
I think we're 13.
Well, right. The 12 disciples.
Well,
that's the Jesus and then the 12 disciples.
So one of us is Jesus. I don't know. That'll be debated. You know. But before we go further into that, I want to take a step back because, I mean, Adrian, you were at the top of a game that most men would love to win, but will never even get a chance to play.
Swish.
What stopped working for you?
Maybe it was working too well. You know, it was working so well that I had sort of relinquished all of my autonomy, my authority to the momentum, the inertia that wasn't my own. You know, I was just being pulled along for the ride, and what a ride it was. I mean, it was luscious. It was really fun. It was hedonistic and
decadent.
Oh yeah, it was moist.
Yeah.
You know, and I realized that I was being used up. You know, I really look at it as I was being exploited, maybe on some level. I was exploiting myself, let's say. I was allowing myself to be prostituted for money and fame and a sense of self, to become the man so that I felt powerful. The man, and I say the man intentionally, but I wasn't a man. I was like just a representation, an idea of a man that was projected on television screens around the world. And you know, to be a man is something much different. And I had to go figure out what that was, what that looked like. And and I just felt it intuitively. There was for many years when things were at their best, when I had you know, you look on paper and everything's working. I have the money, I have the fame, I'm climbing the ladder of the business, the industry. I'm getting into investments. I have properties. I'm becoming a little mini Brooklyn real estate mogul. I have all the things. Access, power, female attention. And yet there was something gnawing inside, that this dread, this, I couldn't put my finger on it. There's part of me is like, I was waiting for the other shoe to drop, like something. Surely life can't be this good, right? There's got to be something else. And yet everything just kept getting handed to me. Everything was just rolling out perfectly. And I finally hit rock bottom, and I had a breakdown. I realized that dread, that secret dread, was in fact a part of me that was dead inside. That wasn't really, you know, I realized I hadn't made a decision for myself ever in my entire life. You know, I was thrust into this world. I, you know, I was born, and then, you know, needed mommy to feed me to survive. And then when you're a toddler and you're a kid, you're listening to your parents. And then maybe when you're a teenager, you're listening to your friends and getting into trouble and doing what they tell you mm-hmm. is cool. You know, what's hip. And, mm-hmm. and then you're maybe in your 20s and you get a job and you're listening to your boss. And then maybe you find independence and you're doing your own business and working for yourself, mm-hmm. but you're just really answering to Uncle Sam or mm-hmm. chasing the dollar. And I hadn't been making decisions intentionally, following my heart, following my Dharma, following my purpose. Like, what the fuck am I doing here? Because I was headed straight for the inevitable. I'm a mortal man and I'm, you know, my days are dwindling. Mm-hmm. And I realized, I was like, why did I come here? Mm. Why am I here?
And so you're asking that question at a time when you're also looking around and not feeling deeply connected to the work you're actually doing. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. I mean, I really love acting. I love filmmaking. I love being creative. You know, there's something very fulfilling about it. Mm-hmm. But the creative arts and acting in particular really is just, you know, it's an illusion. You're creating story, you're creating illusion. Mm-hmm. It's a magic trick. Mm-hmm. And I was totally ungrounded and unrooted. So my whole life was designed to lift off of the ground, mm-hmm. come out of my body, escape into illusion and delusion and numbing and escape and the lifestyle, also the spoils of that industry, mm-hmm. Hollywood, mm-hmm. is the seduction of it is that you get to have all of the tasty treats,
yeah.
of indulgence,
yeah.
which further take you out of yourself. And I guess I came to understand later, after I did enough of the self-discovery inner work, is that I think we come here to be rooted in. You know, a lot of times people think spirituality is out
and, yeah.
It's like in the stars,
yep.
but really much of it is, I mean, it is that, but it's also being here on the earth,
yeah.
and doing what you can to support humanity.
Yeah.
Our collective growth.
Yeah. Well, you know a lot about my story and my family story. We're going to talk about fatherhood in a little bit too, but I mean, you're speaking to the experience that I've lived in my family dynamic, where my father, his spirituality has taken mm-hmm. him away from his body, away from the earth, into the clouds, away from his family. It's yep. bizarre. It's weird. And it's tragic, really, and painful. Yep. So,
I know that about you.
But you're pointing to something, Adrian, that also I think so many men have a confrontation with eventually, regardless of what kind of success they achieve. It's that confrontation of, okay, I've been doing the thing that I was supposed to do for decades now, and it ain't scratching the deepest itch. There's still an itch. You know, I see this, I mean, whether it's, you know, one of my friends wanted to be a fighter pilot. When we went to college together, and he became a fighter pilot in the Air Force, and you know, did his 25 years and now flies for the airlines. And that's like just the natural progression. But there was some point where he came to that confrontation too in the military, where he's just sort of looking around going, is this it? You know, he has, in a way, one of the most prestigious jobs on the planet, fighter pilot for the United States Air Force. Doesn't get cooler than that, except for maybe, you know, the lead actor on an HBO series. I don't know, comparable. And still he's looking at himself going, what am I here for? You know, he's living in that question. And so I think that confrontation that you speak of is so universally relatable to men. I get the benefit, Adrian, of knowing you more on the other side of you leaving that world, right? I didn't know you when you were on that side of it. But what I'm curious about is, you know, what role did men play in helping you make that transition, if any?
So I started to realize that the that my version of masculinity, of being a man or being the man, as it was dictated by society, by shows like Entourage, the cliches of masculinity, and often about power or fortune or sex, you know, so there were a lot of unhealthy expressions of masculinity that I'd been conditioned by media to emulate or to aspire to. Furthermore, right, I mean, there may be arguments that media corrupts the mind, right? Sure. On some level, it does. It, you know, it does actually have an influence on some level. But it wasn't the movies or the television that made me do anything. It was that in combination with the masculine role models or lack thereof that I grew up with. Mm-hmm. Right? The men that were physically there teaching me their sort of, you know, destructive versions of masculine, or teaching me how to indulge or to womanize or to sneak around accountability or to just be absent. They taught me that too. Just like set that as like a baseline for my experience growing up. And growing up, I actually ended up, I grew up as a only child with a single mom. So it wasn't like a single father that corrupted me. It was like a suite of men that came and went, you know, and ultimately feeling alone without a father figure, like a real, like my father, let's just say like my dad, to guide me, to teach me, to show me. So there's always that, I have to figure this out myself. And I did, I went out and I ended up figuring it out through acting and finding a way to make money and take care of myself. And then ultimately on a show called Entourage, where I really thought I was hitting it on the head. I was like, oh, I got this now. Cause not only do I get to I get to project what it is to be the man, I get to also become that myself. So it wasn't until I had to completely take myself out of that pattern that I was, seduced into and seek other versions, other expressions of masculinity, and get to a place in my head where I saw that as desirable, right? So I would look at men who were well-adjusted, who were maybe doing God's work or being, you know, a healthy expression of divine masculine. And on some level, I would reject them. What a wimp or what a beta like boring, you know, some way to dismiss that whole thing wholesale so that I didn't have to look at it so that and it was still me pretending I was cool or acting better than or being powerful. And also on some level, not knowing deep down inside that if I started to pursue that, I'd have to give up a lot of stuff that I was enjoying. And so first it was getting myself into a place where I could recognize the value of men who were doing the work, who elevated men. And the second part was to seek and ask for help. Like actually say, hey, I'm 40 something years old. Oh yeah. And this is not something I did when I was in my teens, by the way.
Right.
It took me 40 years to finally go through the rite of passage from like into adulthood. And I would have to, and so get to the place where I could seek out men, humble myself and say, I don't know the fuck I'm doing. Will you help me? Can you help me? So when I reached out to Preston, that was very much it. I was like, this guy's doing something that I know just based on the amount of work I'd done at the time, I knew was where I should be. Those are the people I should be surrounding myself with.
Yeah.
Well, man, yeah, you're fortuitous to be connected with Preston, because he's one of the most generous of heart people that I've ever known. I mean, and I owe our connection, I owe this group of men that we're in to him. It was born out of the longing. Jesus. Well, he definitely sometimes feels the part in a beautiful way.
I think I'm the Judas, actually.
You do enjoy playing thorn in the side, but so do I.
We all. Are you vying for the Judas role?
Trying not to, but sometimes I can't help myself. Okay. As you know.
We'll trade off.
Well, I'm curious about the brotherhood, right? This idea of brotherhood. I mean, you said it. You're in Entourage. You were the embodiment of the ideal man. He's got it all, and he has a fucking entourage. He has dudes around him that he gets to, you know, ravage ravage the land with, right? To pillage and do the other things that ravaging men do in the landscape, and yet you're in a new kind of brotherhood. Now I'm curious, how is your definition of brotherhood shifting as a result of your experience in this group of men?
You know, I often do critique Entourage and that whole phenomenon, just because, you know, I've my awareness has expanded beyond it.
Yeah.
Not beyond it, but
it's expanded.
It's expanded. But I am very careful to make sure to give Entourage its due.
Yeah.
Because it was a fantastic show, right? Like just on a creative level, just the writing, the acting, if I do say so myself, the vibe, the way it was shot, camera work, all of it. And art on some level, I do think, is a reflection of culture, or it's a reflection of us. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be holding up a mirror. And so I think it did that very well. It held up a mirror to an era, right? So it was honest in that way. It was also an escape on some level. It was a fantasy. Mm-hmm. So it did that, and it gave people an opportunity to get out of the doldrums of reality and fantasize about what would it be like to have everything and with no consequences, right?
Yeah, we. I mean, every man has that fantasy, and probably most women too. So I'm with you.
Yeah. So good in that. And at the end of the day, it was about brotherhood and the loyalty of these four guys who could survive Hollywood by always recognizing that they have each other, and that if it all goes away, they can return home and be grounded in where they come from. Mm. You know, Queens. They can always go back to Queens. Mm. So, and I actually built Vince to be on some level that guru who was indifferent, nonchalant, detached from the things.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
interesting.
It's not a pure cautionary tale. It's actually, there are a lot of things that I think are valuable in terms of loyalty. But to answer your question, loyalty isn't enough, I think, for a mature brotherhood. Because what are you loyal to? When you see bad behavior, when you see your buddies doing something that is destructive or unhealthy or, you know, misogynistic, you might want to call them out on it.
Yeah.
And protect them from making those mistakes, and also protect others from the worst part of their masculinity.
Yeah.
So it definitely wasn't that, you know, it was the prior, but there was still aspects that were admirable to this brotherhood.
Well, I really appreciate that reflection on the show. I never did watch Entourage. I've shared that with you. And And so I tend to be a little myself. This won't come as a surprise to you, Adrian, but I can be a little judgy. I can be a little righteous. What do you think? The times?
You're a smart man. It's hard not to be when you know so much.
I try to see it through the lens of discernment, but I know sometimes I can get my rankles up. But I really appreciate that. That's because that's one thing about, I think, oh man, that for me, brotherhood has given me something, a thoughtful, trustable brotherhood that I'm hearing you say even existed in the way the boys on Entourage. A gift they gave each other was belonging. Like no matter what happens, I belong here.
Yes.
That in a world where we are, you know, to quote one of my beloved teachers, Francis Weller, in a world where we are exiled from parts of ourselves, where we live in exile all our lives, like belonging, to have that in a community of men, man, I didn't know what I was missing before that. And I think, you know, something that I'd be curious to know about with you, Adrian, because you know, you and I, we have our, we don't agree on everything.
We tango.
and I think that's a strength that we have, that we're not just all men who think the same. And yet it can also be at times scary. It can be at times, it can bring up fear. Like, oh my God, he doesn't see the world the way I see it. What does that mean? Does it, et cetera, et cetera. And one thing that I really appreciate about this community of men we've cultivated is, you know, that word loyalty. I don't know about, but commitment to each other's hearts, I guess, is maybe a poetic way of putting it. But I guess what I want to ask you, how do you navigate these ideological differences between us that in ways that don't spoil, you know, our fun or the love that we have for each other, the respect? How do you personally navigate that?
One thing I've had to do is really tease apart my concepts, my ideas of good and bad, what's good, what's bad, what's truth, what's not, what's loyalty, these things. And I really do believe that these aren't static states. The words may feel absolute, but they're really a vector, right? They're like a direction and a momentum. Are you going towards that idea, or are you deviating, as opposed to it being that thing? So loyalty, like that really messed with me, because you know, I just got married, and there's like, I could never understand the idea of forever. Like, I'm gonna be with you forever. Yeah. And I realize, you know, like your book, you know, choose her every day or leave her.
Yeah.
That to me is like breath of fresh air, because it reflects the truth that I've come to understand, that I don't have to. When I thought of commitment, it made me feel trapped. I'm stuck. And also, how could I ever deliver on that? I don't know the future. Like how, like what, you know, anything can happen. Well. Like
every guy knows.
But what I can do is be, you know, oriented towards that.
Right.
And in this moment, like bring all of me to that truth.
Yeah.
Right. I'm with you absolutely forever in this moment.
Yeah.
And then here's another one. I can make that commitment yet again.
Yeah.
It's not every day, it's every moment, right?
Yeah, right.
And so that may sound like a cop out to some people, but I do believe it leaves space for, you know, expansion, you know, into life, right?
And
you know, we are, at the end of the day, we're mortal. We don't know the future. Yeah. You know, we're all going to give up on all of our commitments someday when the inevitable happens.
That's right.
Yep. All your bills are going to not be paid.
That's right.
You know, at some point.
I'm going to break a promise I may have made because I'm just dead. I can't deliver on it.
Exactly. So, but what it does do is it frees you up to be 100% in or committed in that moment. And then, so when you talk about, you know, how do I navigate the tensions or the mm-hmm. disconnect that we may experience at times, I guess there's a part of me that just believes in the direction and the momentum of our love. Like, and you said, like yeah. our hearts and
yeah.
what we're doing as men, and that, and it's part of it is to push up against who we are, who we think we are, so that we can test, you know, A/B test it with each other, so that when we go out in the world, you know, we have some confidence that, you know, we're not just that we're tested.
Yeah. I think, yeah, you're pointing at the idea that I believe in, which is life lived well is a paradox. You know, it's like I am all in forever on my wife, and all this shit could end tomorrow mm-hmm. at the same time, through all kinds of different scenarios, right? And I think one of the great gifts of doing brotherhood in this way is, look, we men, we have to push up against each other. We have to. I mean, my father-in-law is here at our house, and he's been surrounded by women his whole life, ever since he left Syria, I don't know, 40 years ago, 30 some years ago. And he's got two daughters and a wife. And like, I'm the only guy like really in his life in the last decade. Mm-hmm. And I love him. He's very argumentative. You know, he really wants to debate everything, and the women around him hate it. But I'm like, oh yeah, you want to debate? Let's go, motherfucker. I'm right here with you. Let's do it.
Yeah.
You know, we get the two, like, to me, it's enlivening in a way.
Totally. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I enjoy it. I really do. It sharpens the brain, you know, you know, it would be fun is for us to just, debate the opposite.
Right.
Uh-huh. Right. Just to like, let's be ambidextrous.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Uh-huh. I'm in for it. I'm in for it. I know. Oof, man, I got to take some deep breaths. Some of the places we have to go with that. It's good. Good.
So, Brian, what you don't understand is I love debate so much that I used to debate. I used to be on your side. I used to go to Thanksgiving. This is when I was like deep blue, you know, coastal liberal elite. I was like, you know, on top of my game, and I listened to NPR, and I knew more than everybody else.
Yeah.
I used to go to so we had a Thanksgiving, like a family Thanksgiving, and my cousin's father was there. And that's like one only time I'd see him all year. And he was more right-leaning. And I used to salivate. It's like days before Thanksgiving, you used to salivate for turkey and debate.
Okay.
And I was incensed. I couldn't believe that he could think the way he thought. You know, what a, you know, like just cruel and uncompassionate person to think the way he thought, because all the suffering, whatever.
Yeah.
The environment. You know,
and
I was debating what I was debating, you know, and that's why I say, like, Brian, like, I understand you, I get you, you just happen to not know what the fuck you're talking about now. That's it.
You know, I'm skeptical look, here's one thing that I will own and acknowledge is that I wasn't allowed to debate, to disagree with the elder men in my life growing up. I wasn't allowed to. And with my stepfather, it essentially meant I was disrespecting him. And the result was just intense anger. With my father, there was just no space to it. Even to this day, you know, I'm essentially estranged from my father, because there's still no place for me to have my own opinion, to have my own view, to have my own. So, you know, it can be challenging for me to debate, I think, because there's still those old wounds in me that are quick to, you know, I'm not going to be bullied anymore. I won't be shut down anymore. I won't stand for it. But I have to kind of get through my initial, you know, back the fuck off, motherfucker, kind of reaction to in order to actually enter, I think, meaningful debate.
See, and it's so funny because I'm not, that's not within my personality really to, to like make a, I'll argue and I'll more like a nymph. I'll come around and I'll be like, you know, I'll have our own techniques of confrontation and mine's more passive in a way, but you come at, you know, you come out with like, just like an immediate, you know, you and a couple of the other guys. And sometimes when you guys go head to head, you stand up and like physically, I'm like, whoa, I would never do that. Like,
can't we
just argue more?
But it's, and you know, again, that's why I want to just own that. And I think that's one of the beautiful things that can come through when we're gathered with men that, that all, where we're creating a safe, trustable space, not where we're all going to think the same necessarily, but where we get to, you know, bring our shadows, to bring our messiness, to be messy, to be, but in the commitment of like, nah, man, I'm all in on you. I'm all in on this, right? There's that safety and belonging does wonders.
Yeah. I think it's so important. It's just a philosophical thing to not get so absolutely seduced by the illusion of life, the truth as it's presented or as it's been conditioned by society or school or the book you read. Oh, you read a book and now you think you know everything, right? You know,
right.
We sometimes our egos make us want to just latch on to an idea. It's comforting. It gives us certainty. Mm-hmm. But really, you know, we are in a post-truth reality because there never was, you know, a singular truth. We have to come together to decide it. We have to decide what was important to us as a community, as a people, what our values are, what we're going to put our energy towards building and creating and manifesting. And so I think it's important for us to have a safe space to deliberate all of this, to battle it out before we present it to the world. And that's something that I've been craving from us is, can we come to some consensus that we can, that we can then apply out in the world. Mm-hmm. And that's the hard part, is because we sometimes get lost in the weeds.
Yeah, in the details, the minutia, the I know.
But who's right? None of us are right, and I will concede that right. And there's none of us that is right.
Some of us might be a little more right than others,
potentially.
Oh man, curious.
I think I'm less wrong.
Okay, that's an interesting way of saying more right. Got it. Clever. Adrian, what do you think men are missing out on who don't have a solid, trustable, consistent, committed brotherhood?
Well, you said it, a sense of place and belonging. Mm-hmm. You know, we also talked about a dojo to spar and to cultivate skills and become capable men to go achieve and do things that are of meaning. Men that will call you out and call you forward, ask for more of you, nudge you when you're playing too small, or you're in a cul-de-sac or an eddy, you know, they like, come on, let's go. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's something that's more fundamental. We're alive, right? And it's scary, and we're we're alone, and it's camaraderie, it's companionship, it's to be held.
You know, this past week, my wife had surgery, pretty intense surgery, and just being witnessed by you men in that. You know, I mean, it's my body the last 4 or 5 days has been kind of frozen. Just seeing my wife in so much pain, I feel it viscerally, you know, and like it's so hard for me to bear. Yeah. And knowing that you men are there just going, I see you. Mm. We got you. We love you. Praying for you. What do you need? You know, even if I don't necessarily need anything, the fact that I've got men saying, what do you need? Can I bring anything by? Can I how's your wife? Do you want us to come? Whatever, you know, that like being held.
Yeah. And if you're being held physically, you're being witnessed physically, you know, you're being acknowledged, you feel where you are in space and you mm-hmm. feel that you're, you know, with another, you know, floating through time, like the great abyss. And even just, like you said, being witnessed, being able to mm-hmm. open up and share feels like it, 'cause a lot of things we can work out ourselves if we're just given that acknowledgement, that encouragement.
Yeah.
And you're not just spinning your wheels. And it is so, so important, so precious, even if nothing is said or nothing is done.
Yeah. I think one of the things that I hear from men so commonly when they come into some of the programs that I run for men is one of the first things out of their mouth is when they start to see what's going on is, wow, it feels so such, it's such a relief to know I'm not alone in what I'm going through.
Mm. Yeah. And you're going to relate. We're all going to relate to each other on some level. I mean, I feel so connected to you in certain ways and all the other guys in other ways. And it's not just conflict, but it's, we are all alike.
Yeah.
We all have similar traumas or struggles or challenges. So we can learn from each other's experience or wisdom. And it's not just intellectual or spiritual wisdom. It's, you know, you men are so loving, such open hearts, like heart center, like truly. And this is something that I strive to be better at, is to be able to witness with an open heart and articulate with love, you know, that how you are seeing that other person. That's one thing I struggle with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it's just, it actually makes me uncomfortable also.
Yeah. Yeah.
When other people say, I see you with love.
Yeah.
And whatever words are, you know, fill in the blanks.
Yeah.
I see you with love. It's like, I don't know how to receive that.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to necessarily give it back.
Yeah.
And I, you know, maybe there's a part of me in the masculine lineage that didn't learn that.
Yeah.
So that's something I'm learning.
Yeah. Look, I have great compassion for men. I, in the relationship work I do with men, I'm often helping to reassure them, look, our ancestors didn't program us to be comforting, to be, you know, it wasn't passed down through the ages, comforting, emotionally supportive men, emotionally connected men. I have great compassion for us. I think we're breaking old paradigms. We're breaking patterns of our forefathers that just don't serve in the modern world so much, and not in the relationships. I mean, you've been married. How long you been with Jordan now?
We've been on a 10-year journey with a 2-year break, and we've been married for 2. Oh man, I'm on the spot. We've been
a couple years. You've been married a couple years.
We've been married, I mean, in my heart, forever.
Yeah, good answer.
And yeah, you know, I think we've been married just over a year.
I'm with my wife Sylvie. Are we coming up on 8 years now? Yeah, coming up on 8 years. And I mean, man, I my relationship would be worse off, no doubt, if I didn't have men like you in my life that I can have these kinds of conversations with regularly, that I can, you know, bear my heart to, and know that I'm not going to be judged. I'm not going to be fucked with or exploited or in some way, you know, dismissed or taken advantage of. Like, I'm just going to be received and seen and challenged in, I don't know, I'll just say the right ways, the ways that I really need to be challenged.
Well, yeah, that's the thing I've always wondered is, I feel so lucky to be in a group of men that are so skilled. Mm. That have so much experience and have really they're top of their game in brotherhood, mm-hmm. whatever that is. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, you know, talking about entourage, right? Like there are groups of men that serve as that, you know, that brotherhood, but often aren't, they don't have the skills. You know, some of the worst advice that I got are from my closest friends, you know, when I like going through a breakup, what do you do? Oh, the best way to get over someone is getting some under someone else or whatever, you know, it's stupid cliches. Yeah. And it's like, and that's the, how do you discern between who is good, who is a good brother or who is the brother that's going to best serve your higher purpose and who is just filling space. Mm-hmm. And I feel like our group is very adept at all of that in the best ways. But for those out there who want to create their own group, how do they do that? You know, when there are so, I guess the chances of finding men that don't have those skills is pretty high in this culture. So
100%. Hmm. Yeah, 100%.
Do you have an idea on that? Like how to start to begin to build a group?
Well, I mean, I would tell
something
men
I've been trying to answer.
Yeah. Well, I would tell men first, contact me, reach out to me. I mean, I'm one of the things that I do is help men step into brotherhood through different contexts, through doing relationship work with other men. I mean, intimate relationship work. You're struggling in an intimate relationship. I have a coaching group for men exclusively.
That's right. I forgot because you actually, you helped me when I was struggling with my relationship. Mm-hmm. So look, endorsement, call Brian.
Thank you. And I mean, brotherhood was a big wound of mine. You know, I didn't trust men. I didn't really even admire men, you know, for many, many years. I was in the military. I'd felt so let down by men. And coming into brotherhood has been one of the most healing and profound experiences of my life that I intend to practice for the rest of my life. You know, I do hope, Adrian, genuinely, man, that we have that this little container of men of ours that we got, this precious little mason jar of 13 men, that we get to go through life together, you know, and that feels profoundly comforting to me. So I'm grateful for you. Just want you to know that. I'm sure I've said that before. Probably don't say it enough, but I just want you to know that, man. I'm truly grateful that you said yes to coming on this journey with us.
I appreciate it. And of course I feel the same. And I love you.
I love you too, brother. Thank you. Now we're coming up on time, so I just want to wrap up with a few things. And you know, I wanted to dive into fatherhood with you a bit. You've just had a baby boy.
Yes.
Wow. Quickly, I'm curious, what's shifting for you now that you are stepping into fatherhood, and particularly for a boy?
I mean, I'm so profoundly grateful to have gotten my shit together in time enough to become a father. And, it was unsure whether that was going to happen for me for a long time. And I just feel so lucky that I get to experience and witness life unfolding through another being that is genetically connected to you, that sort of clicks it all into place in your mind. You're like, oh, we are part of this ever evolving, growing, timeless experience, which is life. Right? And when I was younger and I was truly mortal and afraid of dying, and I wanted to live forever through ego and indulgence and conquering, I now realize that I am an infinite conversation, a timeless conversation, through the children, our children, but not just biological children, but all the children that we get to take care of and be a model for and a role model for and to be in service to. So the most humbling experience is right now in my life to be a father and to be challenged so absolutely to be the best possible version of myself for his sake. Mm-hmm. As much as I want to do the right thing from just you know, a moral place.
Right.
When I witness my son, I feel like a pull to just, I have to not only do what I can to take care of him and support him, but I have to model things for him because he is reflecting me and modeling and, and witnessing and imitating me on a cellular level, on a behavioral level, a psycho-emotional level. I'm texting on my phone level. So it's just, it's the greatest call to action I've ever experienced.
Yeah. I'm just touched by that because, as you know, I'm in the conversation about becoming a father myself, and life has not made it an easy conversation. Life is really bringing me to the choice. Yes or no. Do you want it or don't you? And man, well, I don't know, Adrian, it's a rabbit hole that we don't have time to go down right now. Fatherhood, because I've so much.
Well, I don't have to go if you want
to. couple more minutes.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I'm here for it. This is important, and I feel your heart right now, man. And I you know,
I've
been witness to your journey, and I don't know if there's anything you want to say, but I have something I'd like to say.
Yeah, please.
Yeah, well, you already are a father. Right. You already are a model, and you're right. It is just a matter of choosing to, you know, give it direction again, give it inertia and direction.
Right.
Are you going to do it within the context of your books and your, mentorship, your podcast, or are you going to focus it and hone it? You know, like the laser, you know, to an individual or a set of individuals, or, it's not just a biological thing. It's you know, all the life coming into this world needs that. And if you do it with intention and you do it with commitment in every moment, it is a choice.
Yeah.
If you look at the external circumstances that seem to want to dictate whether or not you get to choose, they're arbitrary. They're not real. Like, you get to choose.
Yeah. You know, just to my listeners, this, you know, this is something that my wife and I are not really quite ready to publicly talk about openly, you know, what we're experiencing in terms of parenthood. But being connected to men like you, Adrian, that you just, how old is Seiko now? Like 4 months?
Three and a half months.
Yeah. You know, and the other men in our group that have children. And I mean, it often does feel like there's a blueprint inside me that lays dormant as a man. You know, there's just a blueprint. There's a part of my being that remains unconstructed, you know, dark, dormant, that fathering, parenting a child could only turn on, could only bring to light. I don't know if that's true, but it's certainly, I just have that intuitive sense, you know? And, you know, one of the things I've noticed that has shifted for you, and I don't know that fatherhood necessarily did this, but I have noticed, Adrian, that, you know, you've turned down acting roles so that you can stay home. And I don't really even see you struggle with that decision. Maybe you do on some level and some, but I mean, there's a profound commitment that is settled in you to create home, right? Community. And it's a beautiful thing to witness.
Well, I did realize that one way to heal, that little boy in me that didn't have my father, that, you know, didn't have that role model, is to be that for my son, and to heal that through him.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Just at the very least, I've healed the abandonment wound.
Uh huh. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, Adrian, thank you for this conversation in this way, man. I feel so just privileged and grateful that I get to just talk with you in all kinds of ways over time and with the other men that we have and the retreats that we go on together. And, you know, we're in a ruggedly individual world where this is the closest I've come to doing life with other men over time. And I'm profoundly grateful for it.
Yes. I love you, brother. And thank you for having me, and see you in person.
Yeah.
This week.
Yeah, man. A little Barton Springs swim at some point. I need that. My body, what I've been going through this week, I need it. My body is like tight and frozen, and a good swim in natural waters.
Well, you could come to mind for an ice bath.
I'm down for that. Also, I got a nice bath myself.
But do you have an ice bath?
I do. I bought one.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. Thank you, Adrian.
Take care, brother.